Welcome to the Making Jobs podcast, where we talk about car repair, business ownership, and everything in between. I'm your host, Matt Hernandez, founder and owner of Matt's Mobile Mechanics.
And I'm your co-host, Tyler Schultz with Witness Security.
So without further ado, let's get the show on the road. Welcome back.
Good morning, makers.
Happy New Year. This is, by the time I probably get around to publishing this, it'll be the new year.
Wes, he texted me the day that, maybe he called me. Regardless, we got in touch, and he goes, "What happened?" He thought we just stopped doing the podcast. It's like
between hunting and...
It's not really been the fact that we stopped. It's more along the lines of busy lives, and he lives in the middle of nowhere. Yeah. And he doesn't want to come up to Tulsa as often.
Goodness gracious. Yeah.
But he's got a new business venture that he's working on.
I am,
hasn't told anybody yet about.
I'll be working on roofing sales.
How did that one go that you had up here?
That one flaked on me, but I've got one in Shakota that's going through, so.
It flaked,
Yeah, she was, she just quit answering phone calls and stuff. I don't know what the deal was. I think it was a weird situation. So, there was a guy who was living there, I think, but he mentioned something about a girlfriend, so that wasn't her. And she also said that, you know, her husband, they're separated from them, but she didn't want to deal with him, and he's also on the insurance, so I don't know what the deal is there. And she's also, you know, from Germany. I mean, she'd been in the U.S. for like 20 years or whatever, but she's still, I don't know, she acted weird about it. So I have no idea how that's going to, but, you know, it's kind of the same. You always have a sale that you think is, you know, going through.
Locked in, ready to go.
And then, you know, something happens, anything happens. It doesn't even have to make a lot of sense, you know. It's like you have a roof that looks like it was hit by a meteor shower, and you can get it replaced under insurance. So why not just do that? I think a lot of people have this misconception about if you file a claim for storm damage that it'll affect your premiums or something, which is not the case. Not for that. For acts of God, it's illegal, actually, for insurance companies to raise your rates. They can raise rates in an area, but it's like zip code wide, right?
So
they can't specifically be like, okay, Tyler, you had to replace a roof, so now we're going to make your premiums go up. They can't do that. They'd have to do it for a whole zip code.
But they can, it because...
They can drop you.
I'm going through that right now. They can threaten to drop you, and that's an interesting deal.
It's insane. I know we talked about this last week, but it's still just, it's insane to me that you can...
A little bit longer ago than last week.
Well, yeah, but last week for this, maybe, I don't know how time's weird. So the...
Especially when you're high.
Yeah. The last time we talked about it. How about that? But it's just insane to me that you can spend thousands of dollars a year and, you know, without fail, and they expect that money coming in, but then you use that service and they're like, yeah, we don't like having to do what we said we're going to do.
Yeah. You can never miss a payment, which I've never missed a payment with my insurance. So I held my end of the bargain up. And they had to follow through on their side of the bargain, and
they got all bothered about it.
Oh shoot! Now we gotta follow through with that. No,
and realistically, it's their own fault that there were multiple claims, because it should have been handled under one claim. It probably would have been cheaper if they did it all at once instead of having to refix things that were already fixed because of future flooding that you warned them about. You're like, hey, this is going to be a problem again.
Not only that, but I wouldn't have been in the Airbnb as long.
Mm-hmm.
But would they pay attention to what I was trying to bring to light? No, That didn't sound like a good idea.
It's, you know, it's one of those things that it's like clearly logic isn't being used here, and it's such a broken system. Just because things are just always done the same way doesn't necessarily mean that it ought to be continued to be done the same way. And that's what they're doing. You know, a lot of times you'll see this with insurance companies. You see with big corporations all the time too. Well, they'll be, you know, dropping dollars to pick up dimes, mm-hmm. you know. And, you know, there was an instance when I used to drive for Swift when I was a company driver. I had a 2015 or maybe it was a 2014 International ProStar. It was a brand new truck, basically, and it was under warranty. A part had broken on it. It was it's called the clock spring. It's the component in the steering wheel that allows your stationary wiring to turn into rotating wiring. If you have buttons in your steering wheel, you know, when that goes bad, sometimes it could fritz things out, cause horns to honk, whatever you're turning. Well, in my case, what was happening is it would cut off my Jake brake. Any time that we would, like, you know, turn the steering wheel, it was intermittent, the Jake brake would just randomly cut off. And so I told them, I was like, look, I'm not driving mountains until we get this fixed, right? I'm not driving. They kept trying to send me loads out east. I was on the, I was in the Indiana, Ohio area running some loads, and they were trying to send me out to, like, Virginia or something. I was like, look, I'm not going across those mountains till we get this Jake brake fixed, because it's, you know, I'm not about to cook brakes or potentially run off the road because I don't have a Jake
potentially brake. Kill somebody like the Hispanic dude in California, that because he did not do exactly what you did, he ended up killing somebody, and because of that, they send them to prison.
Yeah, people don't understand those trucks when they're heavy and you're going down like a 5% or 6% grade. It doesn't seem like much in a car, but you're being pushed by tons, literal tons of weight behind you. Mm-hmm. And those brakes are pretty powerful, but they can get hot. And when they get hot, they quit working. Or you can run out of air. They're air powered brakes.
When they get hot, doesn't that make them kind of almost weld to what's gripping them?
Yeah. They can either meld to the shoe can meld to the drum, or the shoe can disintegrate and you lose braking power altogether. So
that sounds like a grand time when you're going.
That's why if you're driving out in mountains, you'll see these runaway truck ramps. And they're just these little offshoots that are like filled with sand so that a truck can run into there with no brakes and theoretically stop the truck without, you know, killing anybody or hurting yourself as well. So I had the foresight. I knew what we were doing. At the time we were driving refrigerated freight out of Columbus, Ohio, and we regularly made loads to Chicago. So there was an international dealer in Indiana that we had to drive past to go to Chicago. And I figured, let me get ahead of this and get this part ordered. So that way it's there whenever we need it. And we'll just schedule a time to come in on our way back from Chicago. So I called them up, ordered this. This is not my job, by the way. I'm a company driver. This should be handled by someone else entirely, because I wasn't an owner-operator at the time. This should be handled by Swift's maintenance team, and I shouldn't have to deal with it at all. But I knew that incompetence abounds in large corporations, and I was not about to put my schedule, because off time I get breakdown pay, but I think our breakdown pay was like $100 a day to split between me and my co-driver. Yeah. So we would make $50, you know, where normally our truck, every time that truck was running, every single day it was running, me and my driver were making minimum $200 a piece. So I didn't want any downtime. Downtime's the enemy in the trucking mm-hmm. world. And so I called ahead and said, hey, look, I've got this, I've got an issue with my clock spring. Do you guys have one in stock? They said, no, it'll take a few days. We'll get it ordered in. I said, cool, order that in. We'll be in. It's under, you know, warranty, and it's for Swift. And they said, okay, we'll get it ordered in. So we get a load to Chicago a few days later, and on the way back, we stop by the international dealer. I let Swift know, hey, I'm putting the truck in, you know, for this warranty work to get done. Well, the mechanics came to me and they're like, hey, you know, we found the problem. It's the clock spring. They didn't tell me it was the clock spring. They told me it was something else. They said, we found the problem, but we'll have to order the part. And I'm like, what the heck? What do you mean you have to order the part? And I was like, we can't have, how long is it going to take? They're like, well, probably about 4 days. And I was like, we can't have this truck sit for 4 days. And they said, well, there's a possibility we could solder it back together and fix it, but it's not covered. That type of repair is not covered under warranty. So it'll cost $300 to get fixed. So I called Swift and said, hey, look, they don't have the part. It'll cost three, but they can fix it for $300. It's just not under warranty. And so you'd have to pay out $300 to get this fixed. Or we can get the, you know, warranty work done, but we got to wait 4 days. I'm like, oh, well, then we'll just wait for the warranty work. I'm like, no, you don't understand. That means the truck's going to be sitting for 4 days. And they're like, no, you can't do that. I'm like, are you kidding? Are you insane? I was like, do you understand how much money this truck makes the company? Not just me. Like, I'm not only going to be losing money, but every single day that truck was running, it made Swift between $200 to $400 a day. So if we were going to be sitting for 4 days, there's a potential loss of $1,600 profit, gross profit for Swift, or well, semi gross profit after you count my pay. And then they also had fuel and stuff. But either way, even if you netted it out completely out and covered expenses and everything, you'd probably be looking at no less than $800 in profits that they were just throwing away because they didn't want to spend $300. And so, like, I got routed around to all different people in Swift. I'm like, look, get me to your boss. Let me explain to your boss what's happening here. And so the maintenance department sends me to a supervisor and they tell me, no, we're not going to pay. You know, we're not going to authorize payment for that repair. Our policy is it has to be done under warranty. And I'm like, are you insane? Do you know how you're losing? And then I'm losing money. I get to sit here for four freaking days in Indiana. I'm like, oh, we'll put you in a hotel. I was like, great, cool. I get to sit in a hotel making $50 a day while I wait for my truck to get repaired. I'm like, I don't want to do that. So I told them, I was like, what if I paid for it? And they're like, well, that's irregular. And I'm like, but I will lose more money than $300. Me, I'll lose more money as the driver than $300 by sitting here for 4 days. I can make way more money in 4 days than $300. And so I was like, I'll pay for it. Even though it benefits you guys, because you guys will be making, you know, way more money than $300 as well. So it turns out there's a miscommunication with the mechanic, because then like came out and there, and I said, let's just go ahead and fix that part. I'll pay for it out of pocket. And they said, okay, we'll get that clock spring repaired. And I was like, wait, is the clock spring? And they're like, yeah. I was like, I ordered that in a while ago. They go, you did? I was like, yeah, check for that. Turns out they had it. They didn't know they had it, because they didn't know that I had already ordered it in. And then they ended up getting it repaired under warranty. So it ended up being a moot point, but Swift was willing to lose money because of a stupid, that's the problem is with policies, you know, and I'm almost hypocritical with that. Cause I say make policies and stick to it, but there comes a time where you have to be a little bit flexible with things because your policies,
well, not just flexible, but, it almost sounds like, in most cases, the person that you were talking to on the phone, they look at the policy and this is the policy. We're going to be hard nosed to this policy. We're not going to change. We're not going to bend. We're not going to do anything.
Yeah.
This is what we are told we have to do. This is what we're going to
do. Which is what I expected out of like
Rachel, you require her to follow your policies and your other employees that you've had. And I'm the same.
But that's the case. I think low-level employees should always stick strictly to it. And that's what I was expecting.
Maybe go to their boss and say, hey, can we bend this rule a little bit for this specific situation?
And that's exactly what I expected. I expected the little peons in the maintenance department to not budge from that policy. That's why I kept saying, get me to a supervisor. And then I get to a supervisor who wasn't going to budge. And I was like, get me to your supervisor. I mean, I went like four steps up to where I was like talking to the head of the maintenance department. And they still wouldn't budge on it. You'd think that someone like that would have some authority to bend the rules a little bit, to grasp the concept. But the problem is with a corporation like that is maintenance, they don't care about profit losses. That's not what they're looking at. You know, they're looking at maintaining trucks and keeping them running. They're not looking at the logistics side of it. Mm-hmm. They have no idea how much money those trucks make and what downtime means to them.
And in a lot of cases, they could care less.
Now, in my company, that's the case. Rachel will stick strictly to the policy. And the only time if a customer asks her to deviate from that, she will ask me. She doesn't just keep it to herself and say, nope, we're not going to do it. She'll ask me and I'll give them, I'll make the decision. I'll make the call, mm-hmm. you know, if we're going to, you know, deviate from that at all. And that's what should happen. I do think that policy should be extremely rigid, specifically for the frontline employees. But a manager or owner should be willing to analyze the situation. And if your policy is going to cost you money, then you need to be able to make an audible or call an audible and say, all right, we're going to deviate from this policy for this specific reason, for this specific instance.
Like your case, how often has people called up and they're like, yeah, I need to speak to Matt? And she's like, sorry, you can't do that.
She's like the nicest pit bull that ever there was.
I would say it wouldn't be a bad idea for you to, before work, back whenever you were really pushing strong on the mechanics, before you became a roofer, it wouldn't have been a bad idea for you to be John. And Matt is just this mythical being that started the Matt's Mobile Mechanics.
Yeah.
That was
kind of the problem is that I had no anonymity because I started, the company's name is my name.
Well, whenever you show up to the jobs, yeah, my name's John. You're here to work on your car. So who's this Matt guy?
Ooh, man, I don't know. It's like the Wizard of Oz. He's like the Wizard of Oz. I don't know.
I think he just made the company name up just to some anonymity.
Some guy out of Toledo, Ohio. I'm just the mechanic. See, I don't have that. With Witness, like
you still could though.
Yeah, I could. I could be like, no, different Matt. You know,
the only one that's gonna know is Mike Pinion.
Yeah,
Dave Rubio.
Yeah, you have a little bit of that ability with Witness Security. You can pretend to not be the owner. You could just be like, sorry, my boss said, you know.
And we have. Yeah. What's funny is I also, this past, last week, it was about Thursday. No, it was Wednesday because it was the night, Tuesday night, because the freeze was coming. And I went to the AT&T store. I was going to try and upgrade my new phone from my old phone, and but my old phone, somehow it was a big old mix up. They put Rachel's phone number to my new phone, and when I activated it to set it up, it stole her phone. So all she could do is basically text me from Wi-Fi,
right? Because it took her cell service away.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then my other phone still worked, but both this phone and her phone were in SOS mode. And so I go to the AT&T store, and I'm like, I need to get this phone shut off, this phone activated, and hers reactivated with her phone number. Mm-hmm. She's like, can I have your ID? I'm like, yeah, I don't know what that's going to do for you, but... sure. I hand it to her and she goes, oh, you're not on the account. I was like, I know, that's what I'm saying. I'm the owner or one of the owners of this account.
Right.
But
you're not authorized goes, to make changes to the...
You're going to have to call AT&T or have the person that's in charge of the account call AT&T and get yourself added. Yeah. Oh, okay. So then I called myself... and acted as Liette and added myself to the account. But again, those policies, they're not going to deviate.
Yeah.
It's so funny, those people.
It and is.
You can get around their policies in some cases.
Oh, yeah. There's one time.
That one was simple.
Yeah. There's one time way back in the day.
You could be
Liette. I was and that's what I've told Alicia, has pretended to be me all the time. And if someone says, well, you don't sound like a Matt, and she's like, well, what does it matter? You know, she has my information. She knows my social security number. She can be me.
She could easily say, so you're being...
yeah, what are you misgendering me for?
Yeah.
Especially nowadays. But well, back in the day, whenever it wasn't as popular to be able to do that, we had DirecTV when we lived in Virginia. And when I was a truck driver, it was difficult for me to have time, especially because I drove it at night. So like my daytime hours, like whenever business hours were happening, I was usually getting ready to go to bed. So we had this issue where for some stupid reason, there was an issue with our auto pay. And so it missed a payment because there wasn't money in that account. And then whenever we went to try and make the payment again, we couldn't do it online. And so she'd have to call in to make the payment. So she calls in and they won't let her pay the bill because she's not authorized on the account. And I'm like, are you kidding me? And so
you won't let me give you money?
So then, like the weekend comes and we head out on the boat and stuff. And she reminds me that, you know, she's not on. I was like, oh, that's right. So I called DirecTV up and I'm like, hey, and I'm, you know, I'm hanging out on my sailboat and I'm like, hey, you know, I need to pay this bill, for one. And then two, I need to add my wife as an authorized person on this account because she couldn't pay the bill. And I said, you know, while we're at it, let's just add everyone to be authorized to pay my bill. I don't care who calls in. If a stranger wants to pay my bill, let them. Why are you? Why does it have to be an authorized person to pay? Oh, that's just our policy. And I'm like, that's insane. You know, I don't care who pays my bill. Now, if they want to add like packages and stuff and add channels, that's a different story. You know, if they want to make my bill higher, don't let that happen unless they're continuing to pay for it. You know, they want to switch auto pay to their account, sure, let them do that. I don't care. But this is just dumb. They wouldn't let Alicia pay the bill because she wasn't on the account. And I was like, you know, I said, this is the first time I've ever talked to you guys. You know, I have never once paid the bill. You know, usually she's the one who handles everything. And they're like, oh, well, she's not authorized on it. I'm like, I don't know how that happened. I think I initially set up the account. Nowadays, though, we've learned from that. And now every bill that we ever do is either in her name or in both of our names. Because generally, she's the one who handles that stuff. And because, you know, I just don't have the time. And even if I had the time, it's usually not in my immediate attention. And so things get forgotten. If I was in charge of the electric bill, we'd be in trouble. We probably wouldn't have electricity half the time.
Yeah. Yeah. Same.
And so
I think the average household usually relies on the wife to do those things.
Well, especially in the case of like with me in the 15 years that Alicia and I have been married, she's always been a stay-at-home mom. And so that's in her purview. That is her, you know, she's the one who's in charge of the goings-ons in the domicile. You know, she's the domestic manager or whatever. There's different titles for it now because I guess like homemaker or housewife or whatever, or stay-at-home mom. Now that people are coming up with clever ways to like call it, you know, I think it's like household manager or domicile, domestic management executive or something like that. And that's what she is. Yeah, I would get offended for her whenever people would be like, oh, you know, what's your job? And she's like, well, I'm a stay-at-home mom. And they're like, oh, do you have like a job? And I'm like, yeah, that is her job. Like, you, like, she does a lot. Like, and like, oh, but for money, I'm like, oh, she makes a lot of money. Trust me, she gets about 60% of my paycheck. So, and the other 40% doesn't get spent on fun things for me. That's just extra. Like most of my money goes to her, you know, and running the household. We've got kids. That's expensive, you know. She works for her money. Trust me. you know, she handles 100% of our meals, handles, you know, taking care of the bills and stuff at the house, runs the house, raises the kids, teaches them because we homeschool. So yeah, she has a real job, and her job doesn't have, you know, normal business hours. Her job's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
24/7, 365. Yep. You're going to be a parent, whether you like it or not.
Yeah, especially as a mom. You know, moms don't get to take sick days hardly. You know, because if, you know,
we do.
Yeah.
As husbands, we are supposed to get pampered.
Yeah.
When we're sick.
Yeah.
Even if it's just a cold.
Mm-hmm. That's why last night we're watching a movie with the kids, and two of them are sick, so they weren't allowed in the room. I was like, "You guys stay away." And then the other three were in there, and I was like, "No one sits near me on the couch. I want a couch cushion space between us. I'm like, I cannot get sick, so you guys stay over there. I love you from a distance right now. We're not doing this where I get sick, especially like I don't have time to get sick.
No,
it's not something I go to great lengths to try and avoid it. I almost avoided my family's Christmas gathering just because I knew that this sickness would get passed around. I have a big family, and so my grandparents' house isn't tiny, but it's not
huge either.
It's not big enough to fit 50, 60 people in there all at once. And it's also set up poorly. It's designed from, you know, the 80s, and they have a tiny little galley kitchen, and the common areas just aren't really set up.
No, their kitchen, well. It would not be a bad idea to blow out that wall where the kitchen stops.
Yeah. I've said many times, there's a lot of ways to make that house way more functional. And one of which is to do that. Also, secondly, that stairwell makes no sense. It's first off, it's a pretty steep stairwell. And secondly, it goes right to the door. I've come up with designs where we could wrap the stairwell around, open up and do a catwalk upstairs and raise the ceiling in the living room.
That's a lot of work, though.
Kitchen. It is. It's a ton of work, but that's what that house would need in order to be modernized, in order to catch up with the times. But anyhow, policies, they need to have weight to them, and they need to have strictness, especially at the lower levels of employees. But the management needs to have some authority to make, you know, calls to be able to deviate from that. And then owners have the ultimate say. Now, owners, you're beholden to your own policies,
mm-hmm.
but you can also make smart decisions and decide, hey, this policy in this instance is going to cost us money or cost us a customer, so we're going to deviate from it for this, you know, make an exception. Every rule, or most rules, are there as exceptions to them.
So, have you seen, who was it? The different things that have been happening throughout Congress and stuff like that lately. And this is totally, I did not segue it.
Segues be damned. Get them out of here. We don't need them.
But no, Congress has had some different interesting things happening lately. Supposedly, according to our awesome vice president, she grew up doing Kwanzaa.
Oh, yeah.
Which is really funny. Benny Johnson, he's on Twitter. He put the video of her talking about Kwanzaa and just going on about how she grew up doing this Kwanzaa thing and explaining how it's just this great and wonderful way to celebrate her traditions or whatever.
Her culture and her heritage.
Yeah.
Probably.
Well, the funny,
I haven't seen it, but I know what she said. She probably opened up with, I'm Kamala Harris. I am a black woman. My pronouns are she, her. And I celebrated Kwanzaa.
She goes on and on about it. And then he posts another picture of her
wearing a green dress.
And her sister when they were super little. And they've got a Christmas tree in the background. And he goes, "Wait, whoa. You just said that you only celebrated Kwanzaa when you were growing up."
I'm
we constantly have this conversation.
I think we're at a point in time in the timeline where politicians have not quite figured out that the internet exists, you know. they're just like,
when you put your hat into the ring to be a politician, you ought to remember that, hey,
you're under a microscope.
I'm going to be scrutinized till there's no tomorrow.
The microscope today is much more powerful than it was back in the 80s whenever Biden was running for a Senate or whatever.
And he lied through his teeth.
Yeah. And even at that, he didn't get away with it whenever he was running for president the first time around back in the, the 90s? I think he was running for president, and he didn't get away with it back then because there were journalists out there who actually had journalistic integrity and did some research, as people do. And
not at thepunkguy.com.
No, because the internet wasn't really a thing back then.
My wife, so this past week, we were preparing some ribs, and because of thepunkguy.com spot there that I just talked about, she goes on to YouTube and she's finding this video to make sure we did prepare the ribs correctly.
Oh yeah,
or the best way, because we were going to slow cook them.
Mm-hmm.
And she finds this video, and the guy goes, "Now what you want to do here?" I mean, just real slow Southern accent as he's, "You want to get the spoon or a butter knife, and you want to take it and try and pull off the membrane." And then he goes, "Now, you might want to have some paper towels handy so you can really get a good grip on that membrane."
Yeah, this is all good advice, too, by the way. That's the best.
It was hilarious the way he's, I mean, I don't know if you've ever watched a show, Texas Flip and Move. It's one of those,
it's an HGTV situation.
Yeah.
Like a Chip and Joanna Gaines thing.
The guy narrates the entire thing, as just this slow Southern drawl. And so when you want to buy a house, this is the way to go. And just so funny. And we're trying to keep a straight face as we're trying to pull this stupid membrane off his ribs. And we're just dying laughing. We play that video I don't know how many times. It's 11 o'clock at night. That's probably why we were so giddy. But
yeah,
it was hilarious. Let's take a break real quick so I can refill my coffee.
Yeah, that sounds good. Here is a word from our sponsor. We have returned.
Good morning. Oh, wait.
Sunday morning.
So we were already here once.
Yeah, how about that? Not exactly super new news, but still relevant. Southwest Airlines. I talked to you a little bit about that over the phone. Did you look more into it at all? I
looked a little more into it. Holy smokes.
It's freaking nutso butso over there at Southwest Airlines. They are scrambling.
This could actually really screw them up.
What did I tell you? I'm like, the latest article that I read about it showed that over the holiday weekend, they had canceled like 11,000 flights. Imagine the hotel accommodations that they're going to have to, the flight reimbursements, all of this stuff. I mean, that alone can just straight up bankrupt them.
It could.
I mean, here's the thing is about airlines. Airlines fall into a...
My question is why didn't the other airlines have to cancel as many flights?
Okay, so I mentioned that a little bit on the phone, but let me explain this to the listeners. The reason why Southwest is in such a uniquely pooch-screwing position that they are in is because of their logistics system that they use. So the majority of airlines, so I have a pretty decent understanding of transportation and logistics, having been involved in it for, you know, quite some time, and being an owner-operator of a trucking company. I understand a lot of how logistics work and transportation works. So airlines, typically, the majority of them, so we basically have four major airlines, and the three of them that aren't as screwed as Southwest, like American Airlines and Delta, and forget the third one. I know it ain't Spirit, but they use what's called a hub and spoke model. Mm-hmm. So imagine the country, and then you have central hubs in certain areas like Tulsa, Chicago, LA, New York City, yada, 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 right? So say you book a flight.
Tulsa would be a small airport in comparison to like Dallas.
But Tulsa International is very similar to a hub and spoke model, primarily American Airlines flies out of there, and they do use a hub and spoke. So the way it works, say you book a flight. and you want to fly to Chicago. You get on an airplane with your, you know, 300 of your closest pals, and and you fly over to Chicago. If this is a hub and spoke model, then what happens is that flight crew will then fly back from Chicago to Tulsa, regardless if that flight gets, if a flight gets booked full to head back to Tulsa. American Airlines is going to return that flight crew and that airplane back to their hub and or spoke, or their hub and spoke, their basically their distribution hub.
They stay on the same path constantly.
More or less. Now that Tulsa flight might then go to LA, but then eventually that plane is going to route its way back to a hub and spoke. And then what would happen is if they come to Tulsa, that crew, that airplane may be going to LA, but that crew may go back to Chicago or go to New York or go to Houston or whatever. So the planes and the crews end up working primarily out of a centralized location. Okay. So that is not a bad model. There is some inefficiencies in it because that means that sometimes flights returning back to a hub are not going to be as full, so they're not going to be as profitable. In some cases, may even cost the company money because the price of jet fuel, the labor involved, the maintenance on these planes, if you don't have an absolutely packed full tin can, you're not really making money. So a half full flight is probably just covering the cost to get that plane back. Now, a more efficient profit-making model is what Southwest uses. Now, Southwest uses what's called a point-to-point model, which means that if you book a flight from Tulsa, you load up with 300 of your closest friends and the air crew and fly to Chicago. And then that plane, though, will then take another flight. Southwest will take that crew and that plane and send them to, say, Shreveport, Louisiana. And then from Shreveport to Louisiana. So they eventually will work their way back to wherever the crew is from, wherever they live. And they may not even use the same plane. That plane may go from Chicago to Louisiana, but then that crew gets on another flight that's heading to, say, Dallas. And then from Dallas, that plane goes on to LA, but that crew goes back to Tulsa on another flight. Either they hop aboard a flight that's already booked, or they take their own plane and, you know, and crew it back to Tulsa. So it's a point to point. Instead of returning to a hub and spoke, that plane just goes wherever. So the same plane may not be in the same city all year long. You know, it may start in Tulsa and then just zigzag its way across the country, and eventually it may be back in Tulsa next year, type of a deal. And the air crew swap around. Now, in a perfect world, in a perfect system, this is a more efficient model because you're never sending half-empty planes back to a hub. You're not having as many, basically, you're paying for man hours on a plane that may not necessarily be crewed by the crew. So it's efficient as far as cost efficiency goes, and this all works great. However, what had happened was we had winter storms around the holidays, which is already a hectic time for transportation companies and airlines. Airlines get absolutely slammed in the holiday season because everyone's traveling. People are going to go visit family. People are, going to go visit family, coming home for the holidays, going on vacation for the holidays. So airlines are already basically booked to the gills. They don't really have a lot of room for error in these situations. And then when you get a winter weather situation that grounds a bunch of flights and causes you to cancel a whole bunch of flights, it really disrupts a point-to-point logistics system. Because what happens is, so in a hub and spoke model, they're going to be screwed. You know, weather's going to down their planes, down their flights, and yes, they're going to have to cancel a bunch of flights. But when the weather clears,
then they pick right back up.
They pick right back up because their planes are already set to go. Southwest, on the other hand, they've got all of these plans for these planes, and if you miss, 3 days of flights, well, that plane that is in Chicago that was supposed to be in LA because of all the planned flights and is now no longer in LA, now that LA flight that was supposed to be able to be picked up from the Chicago airplane and crew can't be flown out. And so from LA, it was supposed to go to, say, New York, and New York from New York, it was supposed to go somewhere else. So now New York doesn't have it. So it basically cascades and domino effects to the point where none of the planes are where they're supposed to be. None of the crews are where they're supposed to be. And so it takes way more to jerry-rig it back to reset to get the ball rolling again.
I don't know because I'm not a flight plan analysis or whatever, but it would sound like all you would need to do is kind of reset, just
sort of, and that would be the case if you were, say, an airline that had two planes, two crews, and you had like two different flights to figure out, right? You know, you'd be like, oh crap, well, let's back this up and reset. We're talking thousands, tens of thousands of flights.
Oh, I'm sure.
But over the holiday weekend, they had to cancel 11,000 flights, which wasn't even all of their flights, mind you. That's about 40%, right?
Shoot.
So they're scrambling. Yeah, so, you know, 60% of their, you know, no one talks about the fact that the majority of their flights still made it out, but it's still, because that's a large number, 40% being 11,000 canceled flights. That's, you know, say it's a full flight of 300 passengers. You know, we're talking somewhere in the neighborhood of 3 million displaced passengers, you know. That's a lot of freaking people. That's a, you know, 1% or, wait, no.
On the low end, $300 a ticket and reimbursements that they're going to have to give.
Yeah.
And
I mean, there's Southwest airline crews that are talking about how, like, the pilot's lounges are standing room only, like they're just full to the brim because they've got too many crews in one airport, no crews in another airport. They would go to try and book hotels to stay for the night, and all of the hotels in that city are booked because of all the displaced passengers and crews. And on top of that, their phone lines are absolutely being, you know, clobbered.
Well, Tulsa wasn't full when it comes to hotels.
Oh, yeah. Tulsa might have been one of those dead zones where they just didn't have any planes or crew.
And the reason I say that is there was a lot of displaced passengers. It was on the news last night, which I don't know if you know this, but Haystack News, you can get your local channels through Haystack, and it's free. Through Roku TV. I don't know if you have Roku, but
I mean, I do, but I use Apple TV, so I'm sure there's an app for it on Apple.
So the Roku TV, love you, babe.
Love you too, Tyler.
The Roku app on, or actually, it's a Roku TV. You can actually AirPlay to the Roku TV, which that's phenomenal.
That's how my, I mean, I have a smart TV, but I don't use the smart TV function, honestly.
I love the new Roku TVs. They are phenomenal in comparison. So
I used to, just a little side tangent, I used to like smart TVs. The problem that I found with them is that, now this is pre-Roku. No, what I didn't like about them is like a Vizio smart TV. I had a TV that was like 2 or 3 years old, and they quit releasing software updates for the apps on it, which meant that Netflix was like unusable on the TV because it kept screwing up. But I think with Roku TVs, because Roku's operating system is pretty ubiquitous now, they actually continue software support versus everyone used to have kind of their own proprietary, like Vizio would have one, Samsung would have a different one. Sony TVs would be different, but now all of the brands kind of just use Roku as the platform.
Right. And they did a very wise thing. I mean, they had their software in this little chip thing that you'd plug in, and
it used to be a streaming device. Now it's smart TV is a Roku one. Yeah.
So much better. I mean, Amazon should take a bite out of that and do the exact same thing.
That's why we switched to an Apple TV, because it wasn't the case back then. And I was like, well, if I'm going to get something that's going to get outdated, I'd rather it be a device rather than the TV itself. Because the TV, it doesn't need to be smart. It just needs to display my smart devices, you know. Anyways, so that was my little side tangent on that. What were we talking about before? Oh, yeah, you were talking about the news, Southwest Tulsa flights or Tulsa air hotels were not booked. Haystack was
it? Dude, you can actually put your interests on it, like it's a social media almost. But if you prefer conservative news, then you can go that direction. It'll pull it for free. You can get your local news, so it's pulls it up by its zip code. I never put the zip code. It just pulled it because
location services. Yeah.
It's super cool. But there's been many, like the last election that we just had back in November. I watched the highlights of the election. By the way, Arizona Carrie Lake against her, the one she was running against, just came out that there was election fraud in that election.
Imagine that. So what was about the hotels, though, in this haystack?
Oh, yeah. There was multiple hotels that they went and talked to the hotel manager, and they're like, we had multiple people cancel their reservations, and so we went from being solidly booked.
Oh, because there was a bunch of flights that were supposed to be coming in that weren't.
Solidly booked.
Mm-hmm.
To we are barely even.
And this all happened to happen in it was a perfect storm, you know, no pun intended, between the winter weather storm. It's happening on the holiday seasons where the airlines are already just slam packed.
I mean, everybody thinks, oh, white Christmas is the way to go.
Yeah.
When you put all of the problems that come with a white Christmas, that screws up a lot of things.
Oh, man. And so Southwest is struggling, and I honestly don't know how they're going to come out on top on this without. And then what's annoying to me is that the article I was reading was New York Times article. I also read the CNN article. I like to kind of
get, I guarantee I know someone that's going to buy into it if it does start having problems. He loves buying into things that really start going belly up.
Oh, yeah. Is his name by chance Matt?
Oh, no.
Or are you talking about the guy who's not a cat?
No.
Or Elon Musk?
No. His name starts with Warren and ends with Buffett.
Oh,
that dude, yeah, that guy. For some reason, man, he always buys into companies that are failing. And
well, I mean, that's the way to go. You buy low, sell high.
He does it so strategically and wins out. So,
The article I was reading, they were talking about, oh, it's drawing federal scrutiny, blah, 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 blah. What's annoying to me is that the federal government's even getting involved in this.
They need to keep their sticky little hands out.
It's a freaking private business. Let the private business do whatever the private business do. If it's going to fail,
let it fail.
I cannot express how annoyed I mean, back in the housing crash in 2008, GM wasn't doing so hot, and neither was Chrysler. They took these bailouts from the government, and people talk like it was some loan that got paid back, but it wasn't the case. What happened is, back then, is the government bailout bought the company's stock at current market value, basically, to give them working capital. But then, after they were back on their feet again, they were allowed to buy back their stock. And so the companies, GM being one of them, bought back their stock for a fraction of the price that the government paid for it. So the government lost a bunch of money. And it's not the government that people need to get this in their heads. It's not the government's money. It's our money. It's the taxpayers' money. And I don't want to be bankrolling a company that failed because they made a mistake. Now, do I think that Southwest, and this is another thing too, they're talking about how they need to, the federal government is getting involved in evaluating how Southwest does business and you know, this, that, and the other, and how they failed and how it points to Southwest failure. It's not really a bad failure, because when things are working right,
it works.
It works great. The problem is they got caught with their pants down, and they just didn't have a plan B, and yeah, so it got screwed up or whatever. That shouldn't draw federal scrutiny because a company makes a silly mistake or whatever. I mean, no one got on Toyota's case for not being able to build cars during the pandemic because of their just-in-time manufacturing process.
Matter of fact, the only company that really took a hit when it came to the whole car manufacturer was the American-made companies, Ford, GM, those one, Dodge. They had so many cars sitting in parking lots. Matter of fact, I remember seeing a picture of a raceway where they had cars.
It's like F-150s just filled the whole raceway because they were missing computer chips. Now, this was Toyota, you know, they pioneered this just-in-time manufacturing process. Other companies followed suit, though, because it makes a lot of sense. To explain this, say when you're manufacturing a car, used to be in the olden days, what you do is you'd make 10,000 F-150s. Mm-hmm. And if you sell 8,000, you're left with 2,000 overstock for the next model year. You put them on clearance and try and sell them off. But when you do that, and obviously these numbers are way off, it's normally a million F-150s are made every year. But when you do that, if you just build a bunch and then sell them, you know, you just build a whole bunch throughout the year and then you sell them, you are left with overstock of not only vehicles, but also parts. Mm-hmm. And you have all this upfront capital that you have to put in. Well, Toyota started doing this just-in-time manufacturing process where you basically are only a few thousand ahead of your orders, right?
So well, you get now, a car. I will say, I am not a huge fan of it because when it comes to when you want, so like they came out with the Toyota Corolla Cross. It's the between the it's a crossover, so mm-hmm. it looks like a RAV4, but it's a little bit smaller.
Uh-huh.
And by a little bit smaller, the trunk is 3 inches shorter uh-huh. than the RAV4. That's okay. It in size. But they don't have them. Like you can't get them. You can't order them.
But this is because of the logistics supply chain disruption from the pandemic.
No.
Yep.
No. I mean, my mother-in-law just the beginning of December bought her Toyota RAV4.
Yeah, and what I'm saying is they haven't caught up yet.
That's a new car. Like the Corolla Cross is a new mm-hmm. they just launched it a year ago, 2 years ago. And they cannot produce it. There's only a few of them out.
Again, I'm now pretty the RAV4, sure.
Even that as well. When it comes to I want blue, they for whatever reason, if you say you want a blue one, and you want tan seats, and you want not heated seats, or you do want heated seats. All of those options, you should be able to say, this is what I want. Make me that car. Seeing it's not made yet, you ought to be able to say, I want it this way. Mm-hmm. Make it. And I'm putting my $500 down as a deposit. Make my car. And or find one in the ones that are being made. Make a few tweaks and get it here. No. Even my car. I didn't get to do anything
again,
when it comes
this
to...
This is because of the supply chain interruptions. They're still...
Mine, yes.
They're
I can
still
see
catching
that.
Up. They're still catching up. Before, you know, there was a time whenever, you know, you really could get a Toyota, a brand new one, within a couple of weeks. Like, if it wasn't at that dealership, there would be one down the road or something that they could get to you.
Right.
And so the just-in-time processing worked fine. Until there were supply chain interruptions, and then they don't have a surplus of parts like they used to back in the old manufacturing days. But now Toyota weathered the storm. They did fine. They made it through.
I think they of all people, or all vehicle companies, mm-hmm. they did very well in it.
But that's because they've also been dealing with this much longer than the other car companies have been running this just-in-time processing. They started it. They pioneered this method, so they were able to, when the method failed because of supply chain interruptions, they were able to pivot a little bit more expertly than the other companies who haven't been practicing this manufacturing before. And this would be a similar parallel to Southwest. They were operating a model that works. It just doesn't work in this instance, you know. So that doesn't necessarily mean that, oh, it was a dumb business decision. No, I mean, they were profitable and managed to make a lot of money doing it beforehand. It's just, it failed in this instance. So why are we getting the federal government's grubby little fingers involved in it? Who freaking cares? I mean, I get it. It's a big part of our nation, transporting and all this jazz. But to be completely 100% honest with you, if all airlines went out of business, you know, on a global scale, yeah, we'd be, you know, disadvantaged from the rest of, especially because of the way our nation is geographically speaking, everything spread way out. So we would have a disadvantage in comparison to, say, England, you know, or really any of the European countries, where they don't rely on air travel nearly as much as heavily as we do.
No, they rely on train travel.
Yeah, they can, you know, you can hop on a train and in one day drive, you know, get on a train and go through four different countries over mm-hmm. there, because they're countries that are smaller than
our states.
Yeah, most of our states. We're basically a collection of 50 different countries. I mean, that's the way our country was set up. The 50 sovereign states, the United States of America. We're not so we have, you know, a vast expanse of land to cover, but the reality is that we used to survive without air travel, and we can't. In fact, whenever people talk about, oh, what about all the goods that are transported? Malarkey. Screw packages, because that doesn't have to be traveled by air. In fact, currently and still to this day, you know, the most efficient means of transporting cargo?
Train.
It's still train. Still train. Look, the oldest transportation technology still in use today. The
Amazon
train is the
sends,
best way.
Amazon sends semis full on trains
mm-hmm.
on the regular.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, there's every major transportation company has an intermodal division. Intermodal means that, you know, via different modes. So when you see a semi-truck hauling what looks like a shipping container on the back of it, it came off of a train, they picked it up at a hub, and they're driving it to its final destination, because trains can't just arrive at your target and unload there.
They've got specific roads that they got to follow.
Yeah, they have to follow these weird things called train tracks. So our nation is set up fine whenever it comes to goods transportation to go through the rail system, the freight, you know, our freight system is fine without airplanes. Where we would have hiccups is in things like Amazon two-day delivery or one-day delivery. There, that just wouldn't exist without airlines. And there are some minor situations that you could point to that would be like, okay, what about, you know, things that are time sensitive, like medical supplies or something along those lines? Yeah, there are some stuff that maybe might be,
put a guy in a car and send him on his way.
Put him in a fast car and get him in a Tesla Model S Plaid and send him across the country in 5 minutes, because the thing's a rocket ship.
When Elon did those edibles, he invented 30 more space cars.
I looked into that. That actually was a fake video.
No, it was. It was a deep fake.
Okay, good. All right.
I just thought it was hilarious.
It was funny, though. So we would be able to survive fine without it. The thing that would be a hiccup would be people transportation. It would take longer to get around. Nowadays with technology the way it is, business doesn't require a man in a business suit to get on a plane and fly from LA to New York to make a deal happen anymore.
No.
The way the technology is, all this can be done online. Mm-hmm. So people act like these airlines are like this some sort of backbone of it, but realistically, airlines already as it is a failing business model. Or not even necessarily a failing business model, but a business model that is always going to be one straw that breaks a camel's back away from failing. And people don't realize this, but airlines fall under what would be considered like a, you know, more of a commodity business. And any commodities business operates on thin, super thin profit margins.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And all it takes is one little hiccup. I know most transportation companies, when it comes to transporting goods and cargo via truck, most trucking companies and like freight companies, you know, they operate typically on a 3% margin.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, 3% margin on a good year. They make 3% of their gross profits. 3% of that is netted to the company. 97% of the rest is expenses. So that's typically how and this is true of very successful big companies like Warner, Swift, Schneider, CR England. They're all operating like if they went to their shareholders and said, "Hey, we made 4% this year," their heads would explode. They love the idea that they made 4%. A good year is 3% on their profit margins.
Now the investors would be like, "Dude, what?"
Right. If you're not very cued into what's going on, then yeah, that is the case. Now, with airlines, they operate very similarly because they have expensive pieces of equipment. They're giant freaking metal birds that go into the sky, and they're propelled by these jet engines that are very complicated and expensive to maintain. They suck up a lot of fuel. And I mean, fuel is a huge major cost of theirs. Fuel and maintenance are their biggest expenses. And then it's not like the airline employees don't get paid well. So you've got a massive labor. And just think about one flight. How many people are involved in that? You've got your baggage handlers. You have your flight attendants. You have your pilots. You have your maintainers. You have your fuel guy who takes the, you know, runs the fuel truck out to fill up the plane.
That's my favorite bit that Bill Engvall does. He goes, I got on a plane and I'm sitting there and playing my Game Boy, and pilot comes over the intercom and he goes, "Well, folks, we're having a little bit of maintenance issues right now. Just trying to get fueled up." And Bill says, he goes, "You know, if I was a pilot, the first thing I'd do is I'd open that window whenever I get parked and lean out and slap the side of it and say, 'Fill her up.'"
Yeah.
And he goes, I think that's like priority number one.
It's a funny comedy bit, but there is, having a strong aviation background, I understand why that's the case. There's a couple of things involved with it. One, you don't always fill up full bags. The reason for that depends on the environment. If it's a hot day, air is not as dense, right? So in a hot summer day, and air is what keeps the giant metal floaty thing in the air. So you got to think about it. The air around you is what's keeping the airplane up in the air. So you have less lift on a summer day. So how do you get more lift? You either make the air colder, which we have not mastered environmental control at that scale yet, or you make the plane weigh less. And so they're not going to skimp on passengers. That's what pays the bills. They're going to fill up with the amount of fuel that they need to get to their destination, plus some emergency fuel. So on a cold day, whenever it's colder out, you know, say it's 30 degrees outside, that air is nice and dense. You can take off a whole lot easier. Another thing to consider too is like headwinds. You know, if you have a headwind, you can lift faster. If you don't have a headwind, if you've got a crosswind. So
does a pilot say, from sitting on the ground, does he have to do the math, or is there a computer program that
produces do the math? Well, I don't know. I'm sure airlines probably have an algorithm of some kind that maybe they punch in a calculator, but as a crew chief of a helicopter, that was part of my job, was during the flight planning, my pilots would put together a flight plan, and they'd say, "Hey, we're going this distance, that distance," and based off of the ambient air temperature, I would make a decision as to how much fuel we're filling up with. Because it made a difference in particularly in my helicopter, we had two fuel tanks. We had a forward one and an aft one. And the one in the rear and the one in the forward, the forward one was more center gravity. The one in the rear was not. So we had to calculate how much fuel was going in each tank so that way our center of gravity was good, to based off of our passenger load, how much weight we had, and how cold or hot it was outside, how much lift we had. So we would rarely fill up my helicopter full bags. Most of the time we filled up for our flight plan plus emergency flight time. I like to have at least an hour's of flight time of fuel left over from where our destination is going to be. The minimum required by our operating procedures was we needed at least 30 minutes of emergency fuel. I like to have at least an hour, especially if the numbers
for some reason allowed. That just sounds like fill her up.
Yeah. So that's not, you know, so, you know, you get your bigger planes. They have massive fuel tanks, right? They're huge fuel tanks. They typically are the length of the wing, right? So the wings is where your fuel tanks are at.
Really?
In a typical airliner. Yeah, like a Boeing 747, your wings are your fuel tanks. So you have a right tank and a left tank, because most airplanes have a right wing and a left wing.
No.
Yeah, it's pretty weird that way. So you can't just be like, "Hey, fill her up," because you have two different tanks to fill. And if you can't go all the way full because of weight restrictions and the ambient air temperatures, and also another thing to consider if you're an airline, fuel prices in different areas. Now, generally, most of them have accounts nationwide and they have a deal worked out where they're buying fuel at a set rate or what have you. But
I was going to say, at that point, wouldn't you negotiate the same price across the
board? To a degree, but you also have to take into consideration, you know, you might be taking off in Tulsa where it's 100 degrees and landing in Chicago where it's 60. So you may need less weight and you don't need to fill up all the way to get to Chicago. You're going to put in enough fuel to get to Chicago and then from Chicago maybe fill up where you can then head on to New York or whatever. So there's a lot of planning that goes on involved with the fuel situation. So, you know, these airlines, you know, they operate on slim profit margins and there's a million variables and there's a million things involved in just a simple flight from Tulsa to Chicago. You get on a plane to go to Chicago, you need a pilot, you need a co-pilot, you need flight attendants, you need baggage handlers, you got the expense of the fuel.
You got to take into consideration when it comes to just the average person. They're looking at it going, crap, we just got screwed.
Yeah.
But the pilots, the everything that when it comes on with the with Southwest, they've got a lot more going on.
Oh man, and the think about the like the ticket counter people who are just dealing with they're just getting absolutely ripped a new one.
And the people that are doing the ripping, they get back to their seat and they're like, I ripped him a new one.
Yeah. Well, and you know, basically, no one's a winner in this situation. The customers aren't happy, as they should be. They shouldn't be necessarily happy. The employees at Southwest who have no control over this are getting, you know, just absolutely just slammed with unhappy customers. Mm-hmm. Customer service representatives on the phone, their phone lines. There was a pilot that posted on Facebook said that he himself on trying to get a hold like on their internal company line had to wait on hold for 2 hours just to get a hold of somebody to find out if he was going to fly out that day. And he said, you know, the people at the ticket counter, he's seen them, you know, breaking down, crying because they've been yelled at, cussed at, slapped and spit on. I mean, tensions are high.
That's ridiculous.
It is. People should keep their hands to themselves. I mean, it's just a freaking airline ticket. But there's a picture of the baggage claim room because
I saw
filled to the brim of luggage. Because that's another thing too. When flights get canceled like that,
empty planes.
You may be stranded in Chicago. Say for instance, you were going to go to New York, right? Mm-hmm. You left out of Tulsa. Well, your bags may not be on that plane, depending upon how the logistics line up. Mm-hmm. So you might land in Chicago, be stuck in Chicago, but all your luggage made it all the way to New York. And so mm-hmm. you're stuck in Chicago with no clothes, you know, no hotel room, no accommodations because everything's all booked up and you're stuck, you know, with your carry on and the clothes on your back in an airport. You know, and so everyone, you know, so it's this big, massive mess.
Tensions would be high, but the thing is, it's not the employee's fault, so you don't do that. I mean, you're not gonna get them to change their mind at that point.
Yeah, it's not like, oh, you know, now that you mention it, we do have a flight available.
Yeah,
you can yell at me all you want. I'm not gonna be able to conjure a plane out of thin air.
That's exactly the. I mean, when. Years ago, Dad and I, he had been in business for a year at that point, and I came on with him. I'm sitting in the passenger seat, and ADI, our supplier, calls, and Ranjit, I can't remember the dude's name, but it doesn't matter. Mm-hmm. He says to Keith, he's like, We need to get a payment. We were past due. Mm-hmm. And we are at a net 30, but we were at net 90 at this point.
Okay.
And the guy says, we need to get a payment. And he goes, we're going to have to shut your account off or put it on hold. And Keith goes, okay, that sounds great. Go ahead and do that. And he goes, but we need a payment. And Keith goes, I'm sorry, I don't have any money. I mean, I don't have any jobs coming in right now. As soon as they happen, we'll make sure that happens. Okay. And then he goes, can you make a $100 payment? And Keith goes, I'm sorry, I don't have any money. And the guy goes, he makes another pass, and he's like, can you make any sort of payment? And Keith goes, you know what? give me a minute. I'm right around the corner from a Quick Trip, which is a gas station here.
Yeah.
He goes, I've got to use the restroom. Maybe that's what it is. So he goes, I'll swing in there. I'll crap out some money, and I won't even wash it off. I'll just drop it straight in the envelope and ship it to you. And the guy goes, okay, we're not going to get anywhere.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. And hung up.
Well, and that's just it. You know, Southwest is in a position where they just can't. And there's going to be a lot of people that are just not going to get compensated.
I would have been one of those the ticket counter people. I'd have been, you know what? Hang on. Let me go crap out a plane.
Yeah.
And I'll get you on that plane.
Oh, I'm sorry. This whole time until you yelled at me, I wasn't even thinking about the secret stash of planes that we have and pilots just ready to fly them.
I'm sorry.
I forgot about it because we keep it under the cover. Over there.
You slapped me and that's what knocked it loose.
Oh man, you knocked some sense into me. Now that I think about it, we've got this jumbo jet that can fit all 1,000 of you. And we'll send you. In fact, you know what? I'll tell you this little secret that we don't tell everybody. In the back room, we have a transporter, a teleporter. We can just snap our fingers and you can go anywhere in the U.S. No, it has been an ordeal on everybody. People need to realize it's not like the CEO of Southwest is happy about this situation either. No one's happy about it. It's a freaking big fiasco, but that doesn't mean that we get the federal government involved. And you know what? If it means that Southwest goes under.
So what?
You know, it sucks, whatever. Someone else will come in. Who knows?
They'll buy it. They'll run with the same name, most likely.
Maybe Elon Musk will come in and just buy it. You know, who knows? Who knows how that'll work out? But the reality is...
If he did, that would be awesome.
The reality
is... I'd buy into that.
Yeah, there we go. The reality is that, you know, we don't need to get... It's not a public... It's not like a commodity that everyone... It's not like a utility, like a public waterworks or something. Yeah, transportation is somewhat important, especially in a country as vast as the U.S. However, it's not the end of the world, you know, if we can't get across the country in a couple of hours or whatever. There was a point in time, folks, that it used to take months to get across the country.
And so, what's called a covered wagon.
So just, there's a game called the Oregon Trail. And yeah, there you go, the card game. There's a game called the Oregon Trail that I used to play in the 90s on the computer. And you know what happened?
Man, I love that game.
You know, whenever I did make it to Oregon, whenever I would win, you know, most of my family wouldn't survive. There's always someone dying of dysentery on that game, you know? Or you'd lose an ox whenever you go to ford a river. Man, it was always a nail-biting experience to try and decide, am I going to ford this river? Yeah, there it is. Died of dysentery. He's got the card game there.
Ryan, my brother-in-law, as soon as he saw that, they went to Florida for their anniversary this past year, and they happened to see it. And he just died laughing. He goes, I know Tyler played this game whenever he was a kid.
Oh, man.
And then Liette saw it, and she goes, oh, yeah, that'll be awesome.
I remember firing up the old Windows 95, dropping a floppy disk of Oregon Trail into that bad boy.
I actually had a disk, but
CD-ROM.
It was installed on the computer.
Yeah.
But, man, one time, my grandma, or my meme, which is French for grandma, anyways, she happened to be, she was on the computer, or needed on the computer. I was told to go take out the trash, so I did. Well, I went in, took out the trash, and I come back, and my grandma, or meme, was sitting there at my computer. She closed down my game while I was in the middle. I just paused it. Oh, no. She closed it down, and I was like, what in the world? She laughs, and she says, move your feet, lose your seat. And my dad lost it. He goes, if he had said that to you, you would lose your crap. I mean, he didn't say anything close to that, but he goes, you would lose it. So now you say it to him and it's perfectly fine. And then my grandpa jumps in and he says, Oh, yeah, life's not a bowl of cherries or something like that. And my dad lost it on him too.
there was a time in that video game where you couldn't save it.
No.
Yeah.
And the other thing was, I was halfway through the game.
Oregon Trail, it seemed like such a long game. I rarely made it there. I rarely made it to Oregon.
I loved the hunting portion.
Yeah, me too. Yeah.
You could take out buffalo. It was great.
Yeah, buffalo and bunny rabbits and stuff.
They've got it where you can download it for your phone.
Oh, really?
But they had to politicize it and make it to where you didn't die of getting scalped.
That's unfair. Yeah, you used to get scalped in that game. Indians attacked your caravan or whatever.
Because it was the real thing. I mean, not the real thing, but it was as close to the real thing that they could make.
So anyone of our generation that's played that game understands that at one point or another, it was a little tough getting across the country. Now we can hop on a plane, be across in a couple hours.
You had to make sure that your meals were correct. Like,
yeah.
Yeah. If you went too heavy on the meals, then you'd
break a wheel on your wagon. Try to ford the river or something like that.
It was insane.
Yeah.
But if you went with just the bare bones meal, then you would die of dysentery or something.
Yeah, or you'd lose a child to starvation or whatever.
Yeah, that's what happened.
You remember, people don't think about this. People obviously don't study history enough, but I mean, you've heard of Donner's Pass, right?
No.
So Donner's Pass is a mountain pass in California, and it's crossing the mountains there, and it's most famous for an instance in the ye olden days, in the pioneer days, the Donner Party set out, and it was doomed from the start. They set out at the wrong time of year, and they ended up in the mountains in the dead cold of winter. And, you know, ran out of food. It got so bad. People died of hypothermia. They ate each other. People were eating each other to survive. The surviving members of the Donner Party had to eat the other people that had died of, you know, hypothermia and stuff to survive to get there.
Jeez.
Yeah, and that was a trip to California back in the day, you know. It wasn't like,
nowadays, you can take a flight. Yeah. And you might have to sit in an airport for a little bit.
And most of the time, 99.9% of the time, all your children survive the journey. You know? No one's dying of dysentery on the way to California. No one's, you know, even in a situation as bad as this, where people are stranded in airports because of the Southwest situation.
You can go to McDonald's.
Yeah. There's a Chili's too in the airport. You know, you could stop
by. Go get a drink and settle your nerves.
Yeah. No one has to eat each other. So there's that to be thankful for, I would think. So people act like this. Realistically, people are blowing this out of proportion to a degree because life is too easy. We've had it so easy for so long that we forget that there was a time when, you know, if your worst travel woes were you got stuck in Atlanta for a weekend, you know?
Yeah.
People would laugh at you. The Donner Party would have something to say about that, I would think. You
know? Back in my day.
It's like, oh, boo-hoo, you got stuck in Atlanta for a weekend. I had to eat Fred. Do you know how... Fred was my friend. You know? I had to watch Fred die. And then I was so hungry, I ate his leg. Do you know what human butt cheek tastes like? Because I do. You know, this is what people, it's perspective,
like,
people, perspective.
It's like the cannibals that they're eating this guy, and one starts at the head, one starts at the toes, and the guy at the head, he says, hey, how's it going down there? The guy eating the toes, or toes forward, he goes, I'm having a ball. And the guy says, hey, slow down, leave some for me.
Oh boy. Yeah, so I mean, it's all about perspective, people. We're talking about this like it's a national tragedy because 11,000 flights were canceled. And yeah, okay, it's a big inconvenience. And I'm not saying, man, if I were not trapped in this situation, I hate traveling commercial. It is my least favorite thing to do. I got very spoiled because I spent a lot of time traveling. Mm-hmm. Granted, it was for work. It was for the Marine Corps, but I did so in my own helicopter. I was in charge of that helicopter. I didn't have to declare my firearm whenever I put it in my luggage and put it in the back of the helicopter. You know, I just brought my gun. You know?
So Mark Levin, several years ago, he was talking about how he had to fly out of somewhere. This is before 9/11, I think, or maybe it might have been after. Anyways, he gets to the airport and realizes, oh crap, I forgot, because he had his pistol, and he wears concealed carry. Mm-hmm. He goes, I'm standing there in the airport. I haven't gotten to security. I'm like, crap.
Oh, I know this story.
He goes, what do I do with it? And so he then he hides it in a bush in the,
it was one
in
of
the
those,
airport.
A potted plant, one of those fake potted plants. He hides it like under the moss, the fake moss.
My question is, how did a camera not see that? How did somebody on security
It just goes to show you how worthless the TSA is. And that's another thing, too. People are, you know, oh, the freaking, you know, oh, we're so much safer with the TSA. It's like, do you know how many international airports I flew into with a gun that nobody knew about because I flew in via a military transport helicopter? And it's the same story. You know, people can fly on private aircraft and mm-hmm. land in international airports, and there's no TSA that screens them whenever they get on their little Cessna 152 out of the Jinx airport, you know, and True. Take off and go wherever. So so I got spoiled, right?
So you know, flying not commercial, you know, in those little ones here out of Jinx airport.
Mm-hmm.
From what I understand, it's not that much more expensive to fly like that.
No, you can charter a plane for around the same price as getting an airline ticket, give or take, depending upon the charter service that you use.
Right.
And there's some cases where it may take a little bit longer because the plane is slower. But
you don't have as many stops.
You can usually get direct flights, and it's like your own little personal plane, just you and your family or whatever, if you're depend upon the size plane you're taking. Yeah, that is the case. People are making this big ordeal over, and again, I would be extremely annoyed if I was in this situation. I've been there. I've had flights change on me. I've had flights cancel, and then I end up, I was supposed to have a 1-hour layover turn into like a 6-hour layover, because I've flown a lot of commercial when I was in the military, flying around for my training. The year and a half that I was training, I did a lot of flying around dealing with dumb stuff.
Did you
stuff.
Realize it's 8 o'clock?
I did not. We've just been going after it, just talking
what
away.
What time did we get started? How long has this been so far?
I have no idea. I think we started at like 6:30, and unfortunately, I just can read bars, which I think this means that we've been going on this particular file for close to an hour, give or take.
Cool. We can probably cut this up and do it in two podcasts.
Yeah. We'll release it as one nice long podcast, probably. But yeah, so it's all about perspective, people. People are getting freaked out over this, but like, let's just think about this. Let's just, you know, just think about the Donner part. Next time you're complaining about a long layover or
a long driving trip
or getting stuck somewhere in this. Sorry, I'm allergic to retard. Just thinking about people.
I mean,
blowing this out of proportion.
I've never thought about it that way, but a long driving trip where I'm driving from mm-hmm. here to your house,
dude.
That
think about what it would have been back in the day if you had to hitch up. First off, just getting your transportation ready, you had to go around the barn, get your mules out, hitch them up, you know, get them ready. I mean, it's a couple hours just getting your wagon ready. Okay.
Yeah.
Then you load the family up and, you know, let's see, we're 70 miles. A typical mule drawn carriage can average. This is if there's decent roads, you know, mind you, what if we just had dirt roads and you had to go with the terrain? You couldn't just like go over. There's a river separating us.
That is very true.
There is a river separating you and I.
We'd have to ford the river just to come to you.
Yeah. I mean, just the what now, because of modern road systems and modern transportation and, you know, having a nice, fancy, brand new Toyota Highlander, you can get to my house in about an hour.
Mm-hmm.
It would probably be days in the past, in the covered wagon days. And you'd have to, like, bring food, you know. You'd have to have meals prepared. And we're in Oklahoma back in that day. There's Native Americans that there's some tribes that may not have been so friendly. You know, the real, you know,
I'd send you a telegram. Hey, we're going to be coming down for New Year's.
Yeah. You'd send me, I'd get a telegram down there in my outpost, and then I'd get it a few days later whenever I run into town to buy a sack of flour.
Oh, by the way.
And then I'd get home to my wife and I'd say, I've just received word from the Schultzes. They're coming to visit.
We didn't tell them they could come.
Man, they did. This is barely any notice. They're coming for New Year's. Honey, it's June. How are we going to get ready for this? And you'd have to, it would be insane just to, we probably wouldn't even be able to hang out because I moved 70 miles away. It wouldn't be possible.
Ryan and Liette were over here for Christmas. We're playing games. And then Liette's like, one of us needs to at least run home and let Java out, their dog.
Mm-hmm.
And Ryan's like, I'm not driving 30 minutes to come back. 30 minutes there, 30 minutes back.
Yeah.
And I'm like, go get her and bring her back and we'll keep playing games. I even gave them the opportunity. I would keep their kids overnight so that they would stay and play games.
Mm-hmm.
And they still decided
to... We've gotten pampered, man.
Oh, we have.
We've gotten real pampered. It's so.
What was even funnier is they weren't the ones paying for the fuel. Yeah. Witnesses.
Right. It's we've gotten really accustomed to being able to have everything and have it right now. You know, just even communication. Like, it's, you know, like you were talking, you'd have to send me a telegram back in the day. And that was a modern convenience, a telegram. Imagine, you know, pre-telegram. Mm-hmm. You had to get word to me. You'd have to send me a letter. And we didn't have a U.S. Postal Service for a long time. You know, that would be, you know, you'd have to, it's not like the mail service went out every day. It's like a once a month thing. It'd come through your town. You'd have to make sure you get that letter on that mail wagon.
Or the man on a horse deal.
Yeah. Or you'd have to like hire a messenger. And it'd probably cost you a lot of money, and he'd have to be like some True Grit type character to make it across. Well, $5 back then was like, you know, 3 months' wages. So you'd send him out because it'd be a long, treacherous journey just to get me the letter. He's got to get across the Arkansas River, make it through, you know, savage territory. All they
were
wanting to
do was let him know that they were coming for New Year's. Yeah. Gee whiz.
Yeah. And typically, you know, something like that, you wouldn't just be coming, you know, for a weekend or just for a day or whatever. You'd be down there for like a month or so, you know.
Yeah.
Because you'd deplete your food supplies by the time you get down there. So you'd have to work down on the farm to get your food supplies ready. We'd probably have to, you know, mend your wagon and all that stuff. And then you'd have to travel back. I mean, it would be an ordeal. It's not like, hey, want to come over for New Year's? Yeah, sure, we can do that. And we can communicate.
Some serious contemplation. Is this going to work out?
Yeah. Is it worth going down to hang out with Matt for New Year's? I might lose half of my children on the way down there.
Then you also have your house. Like, mm-hmm. I mean, back then, one would have cattle and animals. You'd have to make sure that someone took care of the homestead.
Right, you would.
And I mean, like you, when we went to our camping trip, you had to put together all the details or make sure you had all the details figured out before we had the trip.
Just so I could be gone for a week.
And that's just a week.
Yeah. Yeah, imagine like months-long travel. And this is the thing. Back then, most people had homesteads because of a multitude of reasons. One, grocery stores weren't really as readily available. And two, refrigeration wasn't a thing. So you know how you kept food fresh? You kept it alive. That's how it worked. Like you couldn't like butcher 10 pigs all at once, put them in freezers and be good for a few years.
Now you have Matt over here killing rabbits or chickens. And he's like, yeah, I just killed this the other day.
Yeah.
Do what?
Yeah. I mean, that's, a lot of times when we're in a situation where our freezers are pretty full, instead of like butchering a whole thing of ducks, if we want duck, we'll like butcher two of them to have for dinner, you know, because that's how we're keeping them fresh. We're keeping them alive, you know, instead of buying another deep freezer or whatever.
Yep.
But that's how it was, you know, and people are today pissing and moaning about, you know, they got stuck in
an airport.
Yeah, I got stuck in an airport for a weekend.
Not that they they're dying of dysentery sitting in the airport.
Yeah.
They're not, just sitting in the airport. And, their phone went dead.
And it'd be one thing. I don't mind people complaining about that inconvenience, but as it get to the point where the federal government has to get involved and they've got to look at this because a bunch of people were inconvenienced. Now, there are some situations.
Inconvenienced to where they slap the employee behind the counter?
There are some situations where
I didn't know it went that bad.
Oh, it did.
That's stupid.
It is. There are some situations where I could see that are worse than others. Like there are some people who are flying who had medication in their checked luggage that they need. And so now they're in a strange city where they're maybe outside their healthcare network. How are they going to get their prescriptions? All that jazz. That could be
that's a problem.
A problem that could be in potentially a life-threatening problem. And in those cases, I would say, yeah, that's an appropriate amount of freak out. But the vast majority of people are just, you know, majorly inconvenienced for the holiday weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is, it's not Southwest. I mean, yes, it's Southwest's fault. It is. It all falls down to that. But it's not like this is an unforeseen circumstance. Well, it could have been somewhat foreseen to a degree, but it's not like their system is a bad system. It just didn't work in this particular instance. And they've been operating like this for many, many years with this point-to-point model. It's not like this has happened, you know, time and time again. It's not like this is every other day occurrence.
So it makes you wonder if Southwest is that much more profitable than American Airlines and these others, that they can swallow this. Because
maybe.
If they are profitable enough and they can swallow it, mm-hmm. they may not actually...
Yeah.
It may not hurt them enough to where... Now that they're back up and operational, which they should be at this point.
Yeah, I think they've kind of dug themselves out of the hole. But it's one of those things that, like, I don't understand the public outcry so much, and I don't understand the federal... But a lot of it all boils down to
the federal government is... it's Biden thinking that he's got to step in and do crap.
We have lived too long in a...
The Democratic administration... 100% has always got to step in and fix crap. No, you mm-hmm. don't. Get your hands off it.
Yeah, just stay out of it. We've spent way too long living life too easy with too many modern conveniences to where we have a tough time putting things in perspective, and we start making mountains out of molehills over the dumbest of stuff. I mean, COVID-19 was a perfect example of that, where something that was just a cascading effect of poor decision after poor decision, and it all stems from the fact that
COVID-19. Remember, what was the biggest thing that really spun us out of into people fighting in the stores? Toilet paper.
Yeah, people got dumb.
At the same time, toilet paper, that was not a problem.
Yeah.
Should not have ever been a problem.
No,
shouldn't have been. Were people that were not far from pulling the trigger on somebody over toilet paper.
Yeah. I mean, it got dumb. It'd be dumb because the toilet paper aisle would be completely empty, but you go to the baking aisle where all of the flour... And like things that we would be the raw ingredients to make food, those were stocked full for the longest while.
And not only that was it stocked, but it was, I mean, if you got an overflow of poop, where is that poop coming from? The food.
Yeah.
Well, if the food storages are not getting depleted, yeah. then why do you need so much toilet paper?
Well, it's just people get in this mob mentality.
That's where you and I both, and Keith actually, we all said, screw that. I'm getting
a bidet. Yeah.
I'm not wiping my butt like a peasant.
Yeah. There is a point in time when toilet paper really wasn't a thing. And it wasn't like it was
now, I will say,
for a long time.
During the freeze a few days ago,
mm-hmm.
Not for some reason. I know what the reason is. My bathroom in my master bedroom is on the outside wall, and mm-hmm. my water lines to my toilet and my hot water line for some reason froze.
Oh, no.
And the day before it froze, or the day of that it froze, I used the bidet, and it doesn't have any warm water feature.
Mm.
And... yeah, that was cold.
That'll wake you up better than coffee. Just punching right in the center of the poop chute.
shut me the burn eye, and I'm going, whew, that's cold.
Yeah.
I mean, to the point it actually kind of hurt. But at the same time, I was like, I'm not using toilet paper.
Yeah. Well, it's the...
You just sit there and move it around, and yeah, it doesn't hurt as bad.
People, I would have hoped that people would have seen things and gained some perspective from the pandemic, but it seems like with the Southwest thing, it proves that they haven't. Because, again, it could be much worse.
It could be much worse.
Oh, it could be so much worse. And the problem is, like I said, we've lived in this country for having it so good for so long that we have forgotten how tough times once were and how good we have it. I mean, I don't complain at all about modern conveniences. I use them all the stinking time. But, you know, there's times where it's like, for instance, the other day I needed to split some wood. It's pecan wood. And even my big heavy-duty hydraulic press that's ran off of the tractor will not split pecan wood very easily. It's a very, very dense wood. So you got to split it by hand. That's the best way to split pecan wood, is by hand. And
it doesn't even like get it started?
No, no. I mean, it's such a hardy wood. I think my log splitter is a 20-ton log splitter. So 40,000 pounds of pressure doesn't do the trick on most pecan wood. If it's a big mature log, which is the only ones that you're needing to split, the smaller stuff you don't. So I'm splitting it by hand with a splitting ball, and I could sit there complaining about it, but then also I'm like, well, I don't have to do this every day, you know, fortunately. And even if I really wanted to with modern conveniences, I wouldn't have to split wood at all. You know, I could just turn the thermostat on and have a heated house. This used to be reality for everybody every day in the wintertime. If you lived in a cold climate, you spent a lot of time splitting wood by hand. Not to mention, and I could complain about it as I'm splitting the wood, but I chopped that wood down with a chainsaw. I could have had to have done that by hand. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and I can...
Timber!
Oh, man, I could, with a one-man crew, just myself and a $250 chainsaw, I can, you know, I can drop like 3 ricks of wood in the woods a day, you know, in a day. And then the next day I can come out and cut it all up and have, you know, have that wood, you know, cut and stacked
for the summer, for the winter.
I could have 3 ricks of wood cut in like a matter of a couple of days of not super hard labor, versus in the past, I would have had to, it'd have been me and my oldest boy and him, he'd come out and be like, Pa, are we going to get that wood cut today? Yeah, sure thing, son. And we'd get out there with that, you know, 2-man saw, and we'd be cutting, you know, trees down, and then, you know, hand-hewn logs, just freaking swinging away with axes, and then have to split it by hand on top of that. So I'm not going to complain about that. There's too many modern conveniences to complain about dumb stuff like that.
Exactly.
And I feel like people have lost that perspective, and I don't know what it takes to get people to get in that to understand and gain perspective.
Wrap their mind back around it.
Yeah, without like a massive major crisis. Because I thought alone the pandemic would have been eye-opening enough to gain people some perspective. Apparently, that wasn't the case. Apparently, we still need to keep learning lessons, which is absolutely dumb. I mean, it's just the dumbest thing ever. Everyone just needs to, you know, take a step back, take a breather, and think about it. Is my life really that hard? You know, it could be much harder.
Oh, yeah.
Just the simple fact that you can walk into your kitchen, turn a faucet on, and boom, water comes out. Wow. You know, imagine what you used to do. You'd have to go to the well pump and manually pump a bucket of water out just so you could wash your hands, you know, and then fill up a basin or whatever. And that was with somewhat modern technology. Imagine even before that, you had a well that you had to draw it up with a bucket, you know. And you didn't have a well at every house. You had like a well in your little village, and you'd have to, you know, lug water back and forth. That's why women didn't go to work. It took, you know, half of their day was getting water for the house. They were going down to the well and drawing water up, and they spent half their day just getting enough water to, you know, cook and wash hands and whatnot. This is also why most people didn't take very many baths back then. You know how difficult it was to get a bathtub filled up? You know, I mean, it's insane to not have that to have some perspective in what's, you know, in the day, in today's modern technology and what we've got. We are running out of time on this file. I'm pretty sure there's a limit. We haven't reached the limit yet before. So in case we do, we'll just pack this thing up and be done for the day anyway. So
sounds great.
But until the next time, folks, keep your stick on ice, stay frosty, all that jazz. We'll talk at y'all later.